I got kicked out of my house.
The panic attacks. I, like many other teens, have struggled with anxiety, my social anxiety.
Really bad anxiety and depression.
I used to go to school just completely exhausted every single day because I'd be up all night worrying.
I felt kind of like a ghost roaming through the halls.
The stress made me sick.
It's just a lot of repetitional thinking about, like, if there is a purpose to life, whether if there is any reason to continue forth or to just cut it short.
Take a second and breathe and reflect on what you feel.
Awareness to who I really am and how I matter.
Finding balance.
It really feels like a place where you can be yourself.
We can be authentic.
Feel safe.
Safe?
I was like on the verge of suicide before taking the class, and my family didn't really know what else to do. I was in counseling, seeing a therapist, and taking medicine. Spending the first semester in this class really like helped me get past that point and not let like the mental illnesses I struggle with take over my life. So class brought a lot.
Anytime I start to feel like overwhelmed, like drop down, I put my head down, like, all right, let's think. I just started breathing, and it's just really helpful. It's easy to get mad. It's not easy to get angry and then like bring yourself down. Me growing up, I was always told like meditation and stuff was things that like priests or like it was a girl thing. But then you grow up a little bit and you're like, meditation is just you taking care of yourself, and everybody should take care of themselves.
It's real stuff. It's what you need.
You learn these tips for life skills that actually bring you together and interweave with everyone else.
Being able to share.
Direct my attention and stay present.
I can break my fear.
I now know how to turn my attention to my breath, calm myself down.
I knew that I could help myself.
Observe life more.
How to speak in a way that makes people want to open up to you.
Show myself loving kindness.
Learning how to control my anger. I also learned how to, you know, be more of a better listener.
This class means everything to me right now.
It honestly feels like 50 pounds is lifted off my shoulders.
I truly believe that this class has saved my life and changed it for the better.
Thinking about what the mindfulness class at my school has done for my community and my school in general, it's been groundbreaking.
I think it's just a really valuable class, and I honestly wish that it was at every high school in the U.S.
If there was a mindfulness class like in every high school,
I feel like this world would be a totally different place, because I feel like there'd be a lot more understanding.
And there would be a lot more respect in the world.
If mindfulness studies was in every school in the world, we all become much better listeners.
Somebody says something somebody doesn't like, it has to retaliate. But if we had mindfulness, we can learn to accept that my reality is different from yours.
I think a lot of that tension is caused by people not really knowing how to handle themselves and their feelings and emotions.
You don't have to be a politician to change the world. You can just be in Michael's class. That's how I feel.
I have the ability to overcome obstacles. I have the ability to achieve like never before, and I have the ability to be who I am, loving who I am, and taking that love with me and spreading it everywhere else I go.
This is 6 years ago. Mindfulness has moved on very fast and has gone into about 400 schools in England and perhaps more in America. People find it very useful as a skill to cope with stress and anxiety. And this is something that you need to do not just for your exam this year, next year, and not just for the university that university years that you're going to be facing very soon, but life in general, you do need this. Otherwise, people keep accumulating stress and anxiety. they don't know how to handle it. It can explode. It can create a lot of tension, conflict between you and your friend, even between you and your family. Not to mention a very tough working environment once you get into that. To start this a lot early is much better because you don't really need to undo anything in your brain. So it's a brain default. Okay, this is mindfulness, then what about, I mean, how people approach this? They approach it from science, from neuroscience, neurology. So people usually, their brain default to use computer system metaphor. Their brain default is fear, is anxiety, is self-centered. So we need to change this brain default. And we're going to be looking at this one, Science Behind Mindfulness, as a tool for happiness. She's a professor from Yale University, and she spoke at the World Economic Forum.
Shit happens. But this is actually the common denominator for all human experience. The fact is that even if we are the luckiest, most effective people on the planet, life sometimes deviates from our plan. And it's just like Rolling Stone said, you can't always get what you want. And that can be quite stressful. But of course, we all know that shit happens. What is less well known is that we also all have the power to change our experience of this shit, to train and learn how to have a better attitude about it. And how to suffer less through really anything that might happen to us. Today I'm going to show you evidence that this kind of training can not only make you feel better, it can also change the way that your brain works. And the key practice I'm going to talk about is a practice of mindfulness. Now mindfulness is rooted in ancient Buddhist traditions that are aimed at the cessation of suffering. It's actually part of a system of practices that include things like loving kindness, generosity, and compassion, and it's cultivated through the practice of mindfulness meditation. In a secular context, mindfulness has actually been studied for over 30 years, and many scientists, including me, have a two-component process, where the first component is attention that is oriented to this present moment, to whatever is happening to you, so you can engage with your life. The second component is attitude, and it's attitude that's open, it's curious, and it's accepting of this moment exactly as it is. And one classic instruction is to pay attention on purpose and without judgment, or in the words of the Beatles, you just let it be. Now, why might training like this be useful? Well, one reason is because most of us are incredibly distracted pretty much all the time, and we miss a lot of what's happening to us. One study showed that our minds are actually wandering almost 50% of the time, and during every single activity, even during sex. And what's worse is that mind wandering is actually related to being unhappy, and that suggests that being mindful in itself might make you happier, and it leaves you a lot more time and energy to act wisely and make good decisions. That means that being mindful allows you to respond to the world rather than react to it. And how does mindfulness do that? Well, one way it does it is by altering the brain's defaults. That is a default mode network, and you can think of it as our autopilot. It's a network of regions that's more active when our mind is spontaneously wandering and less active when we're focused on a task. And to test whether mindfulness meditation altered these defaults, we recruited experienced mindfulness meditators, not Buddhist monks, but healthy Western adults who just happen to meditate for many years, kind of like me. And we then scanned their brains using fMRI and compared their brain activity to the brain activity of well-matched control who've never meditated. What we found is that experienced meditators actually report a significant lower amount of mind wandering and less activity and connectivity in their default mode network. Does it mean that you all need to practice many, many years to change your defaults? Apparently not. Much less training already starts changing your defaults. In one study, stressed adults were recruited and randomized into one of two conditions. They either did intensive mindfulness training for 3 days or 3 days of a control training. The results showed that even after 3 days of intensive mindfulness training, there were already some similar changes to the default mode network that were similar to what we saw with the experienced meditators. In addition, those who meditated also showed a reduction in an inflammation marker that is related to disease risk. In comparison, those who did the control training actually showed an increase in this inflammation marker. In addition, the default mode network actually was responsible for some of the reduction in inflammation. This suggests that mindfulness training changes your brain, it changes your emotional experience, and it changes your body in a way that makes you more resilient to stress and disease. And there's even more good news here. You might start noticing some of the benefits of mindfulness meditation as soon as the first time that you try it. We tested this in a few recent studies. We recruited individuals who've never meditated, and we randomized them to either meditate for 10 minutes for the first time or do a control activity for 10 minutes. We then tested their performance on a task that required both accuracy and speed. What we found is that those individuals who meditated for the first time overall were faster or more accurate than those who didn't meditate. And we also saw changes in brain activity that suggested that their brains are more attuned to the task, allowing them to perform better. What this means is that in the time that it might take you to just briefly check your email, you might try to meditate for 10 minutes and you might have an improvement in your cognitive performance. So in conclusion, I invite you to ask yourself, do I want to be more focused? Do I want to be more present? Do I want to have more time and energy to act wisely and make good decisions? If you answered yes to any of these questions, you might want to try mindfulness meditation. Now, mindfulness is not for everyone and it's not a panacea, but we know that it can fundamentally alter your brain's defaults. We know that it can reduce your stress and make you more focused. And importantly, it can allow you to live in this moment, accepting it exactly as it is, maybe even loving it exactly as it is, even if shit happens. Thank you very much.
Okay, there are times when we don't get our way. What if you speak to your parents and your parents don't understand your dream, what you want, you know, how you're going to proceed? You need to be speaking with them. You are part of them, they are part of you. This is a family. This is where, you know, you find comfort most of the time. So, this video, which is just 6 minutes plus under 7 minutes, talks about everything the Buddha has told us 2,600 years. She started by saying this is a part of the system, which is to bring an end to suffering of all kinds. Now, let's get to her point, her central point, the benefits of mindfulness. You can see, you know, how the physical body can become healthier with mindfulness. Did you notice inflammation marker that she... Inflammation marker, as you know, is about the cell that we are born with. If they are active, we have a poor immunity system and we are prone to any disease. But with mindfulness, that inflammation marker is not active. Instead, the healthy hormones, they are more active. I think. So this is one thing. You know, people scan the brain of the meditator and the brain non-meditator, and compare them using fMRI. So how to do that? How to do that? You know, she center her explanation on two things. I want you to notice this one. One is attention, the second one is attitude. Please note it down. Attention and attitude. Attention is to train to pay attention to the present moment. Okay, that's attention to A. That's A star, if you like. To A. The first A is attention, to train the mind to pay attention to the present experiences. And the second one is attitude. Attitude is the attitude of acceptance. We can say recognition, we can say acknowledgement, acceptance. I mentioned in the morning, not going into fight or flight. That's survival instinct. Because it's not life and death situation we are dealing with most of the time. It's not life and death situation. But we use what our forefathers, 7,000, 8,000 years ago, used to ward off enemies, for their survival, fight or flight. When you go into fight or flight mode, when you're in that default, you use up a lot of your energy. You will never have enough energy because you use up your energy very quickly and at its maximum. So then what we have to do is we need to train the mind and not to trigger that fight or flight system easily. If you study the brain carefully, the fight and flight system works with the amygdala, which is your old brain at the back. So that's the fear center. But if your mind is calm, if you can calm yourself, if you don't go into fight or flight, what happens is that your prefrontal cortex, the new brain, starts working. This is where we have executive brain center. So you will make better decision, with your tests, with your exam, with your choice of university and professional life that you're going to study, and even emotion, you will make a better choice. Do you have to meditate for a long time for your brain default to change? Dr. Hattie Kolber said, no. Even a 3 days training can start changing your brain default. So I think we do another session of mindfulness meditation now, because in the afternoon I like to focus entirely on compassion. On compassion. But now I'm going to start introducing you compassion a little bit. When we breathe, why do we breathe? Let's take this physiologically. Physiologically, without breathing, we can't really live. Okay. If our lung doesn't get enough supply of oxygen, then it wouldn't send the oxygen to the heart. And the heart wouldn't send the oxygen to the veins and to elsewhere, including our brain. The brain can only survive for a few minutes without oxygen. So look at how vulnerable this physical body is without oxygen. Your physical body, your parents' physical body, your own. Not just your own, but also your friends. This vulnerable condition, is something that we are born with. Now, this is not to scare ourselves, but to use this vulnerability to actually connect with our fellow human being, to connect with them. If we can connect with them, problems like we talk about, like racism, like abuse of power, and everything else, anything we consider unethical, will be reduced because we start looking at each other as a human being. with a lot of vulnerability. So when you breathe at this time, I want you to breathe with compassion for your body, for your physical body, for your brain, for your lung, for your heart, for all the veins, arteries in the body. We are going to be doing the same meditation for 6 minutes. But this time, I include the intention. The intention, which is based on compassion. Okay, we meditate for 6 minutes. Okay.